thank you so much, Larry. And welcome. It's really nice to meet you, all of you. So by the way, Larry's 81, so he's being humble to talk about something.
Everybody should have it on their forehead. So just
all right, so my name is Kathy, and I've been primarily doing corporate governance research for a long, long time, so long that I couldn't even remember. And over the past 6 years, I've been devoting my life to understand the human relationships and the need for human connection. So this company, Dinoplex, come out of that research, and basically we're building the world's largest database on relationships, substantial relationships, strong relationships that you foster over a long period of time to figure out how socially connected you are and who you're connected with, and providing this information to all sorts of end users, recruiters, sales, fundraisers, a lot of possibilities. The latest possibility that I've come into is a case where the defendant wanted to find a few witnesses that looks independent, and somehow the other party in the court was doing a lot of groundwork to uncover the hidden relationships between these independent witness and the defendant. So this is very, very interesting space, and I certainly wanted to devote my life into this for the next several years at least. Completely threw away my life, my past life, which has been a professorship, if it sounds interesting anyway. All right, so today I'd like to talk about this board appointment situation here. And I'm sure a lot of you have a lot of experience in this area, a lot more experience in the practical field than mine. What I wanted to start with is some research that I've done. So we probably know that a lot of times board positions are invitation only. It's very hard for people to answer to a job posting where they say a large publicly traded company is looking for board of directors, and whoever interested wanted to send their resumes, please send to this address. So when the positions becomes invitation only, how do you get invited? So what are the facts in this area? Larry probably have a lot of experience in receiving these appointments to help companies find board of directors, mm-hmm. and you probably have a lot of experience in getting your board memberships. So any thoughts, any examples, anything you wanted to share?
Well, when I think about the boards that I was asked to serve on, one of those boards, the chairman of the board of that company was on Parexel's board, and so after I retired, he looked to me to join, and that I actually then became CFO of that company. It was a privately held Swiss company where I was having to spend about half my time over in Geneva, Switzerland. I think about Andrew. He's very good at ferreting out all kinds of people and things like that. And
he called
me one day, and we agreed to get together and talk. And he convinced me that I should join the board there. And then when I realized that the Swiss company was not going to go public as planned, and was therefore not going to open a Boston office, and I was going to have to continue to commute to Switzerland, I talked to Andrew about that. We agreed that I could instead become the CFO at Hamlin Scientific. And then the other board, one of the other boards that I was on, one of my neighbors, old neighbors, contacted me when he heard I retired, And in the last case, I got called by a recruiter, but that person had gotten two recommendations from different places and asked me to join the board.
Yeah.
But going back to her question, you were providing a need, a CFO, on those situations.
Right. In all those cases, they were asking me to be a member of the audit committee, and in most cases, chairman of the audit committee.
So there was, in the quilt that they're creating at the board level, you fit a need and had the expertise. And somebody knew you on several of those opportunities.
All right, very good.
Different, rather than somebody coming to recruit me, it's you go in and you make a valuable contribution at the company, your interim executive CEO or consultant. It's a mutual assessment period because, you know, going on, I'm not in these big public boards, I'm more in private. And, you know, it's a mutual assessment and you prove yourself and they want you to add value on the board. So, and you kind of earn your way in.
Mm-hmm. Right. That definitely confirms what I have found out recently. Even with larger public companies, it seems to work this way. So.
I think a good percentage are probably just controlling shareholders, saying they want to put a certain person on, so they have the voting power either through an investment or equity, and they say we want so-and-so.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. I think a lot of the VCs got called to be a board member in that sense as well.
Or demand to be a board member.
Demand.
Part of their, what they're going to do with the investment.
Right. So, yeah. So I think the research definitely supports that. And if you look at your second page of your handout, there's some data on independent director age, tenure, and pay. And the first thing to notice is that a lot of the companies right now have over 70% of their directors as independent directors. It doesn't mean that they're socially independent. So basically, the word independence comes from this NASDAQ or NYC legal definition put out by the SEC. You have that handout. I don't have it here. So the last page, there's a lot of rules. So for you to be an independent director, you needed to satisfy all these requirements. One of them being that you cannot receive over $100,000, but that's outside of your director pay. You cannot be a family member. You cannot directly do business with the company, and so on. But socially, the story seemed to be quite different. The data that's underneath the small font, the much bigger font there, is showing that the average social distance between the CEO of a company and a new director who's just appointed, and the T minus one basically gives you 1 year before this new appointment. So under 1999, this average basically says out of all the new directors being appointed in this year, for all the S&P 1500 companies, the average social distance is 1.8. So it's less than two steps away from the CEO. So one person introduces the director to the CEO on average, so in 1999. As you can see, this number gets dramatically lower as we go into current times. And in 2011, the number gets down to 1.1. So once again, on average, remember that the minimum number is a one, right? So you already know each other. The minimum distance is one. So you cannot go below one. And 1.1 basically means 1 year before your director appointment, the social distance out of every 10 directors, out of every 10 directors, I think probably 9 is already one, and there's one extra person who's 2 steps away.
I want to make sure I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at this number and I said, sure, family business, this is perfect.
S&P 1500.
But S&P 500.
1500. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so okay. I'll explain that. So S&P 1500, the smallest company is about $400 million in market capitalization. S&P 500, on the other hand, goes between $1.5 billion. That's the smallest one right now. And about, I think Apple nowadays is $670 billion
right.
in market cap. So the data above was, so each of the smaller colorful graph have 500 dots. That's S&P 500 companies, with the smallest one being 1.5 billion in market cap, and the largest one being Apple. $670 billion. And the data below, up until 2011, shows the universe of S&P 1500, with the smallest one being slightly less than $500 million.
So would it be fair to say this is reflective of mid-cap public companies?
So the average is including 500 largest companies, 400 mid-cap companies, and 600 small-cap companies.
Okay.
And
could I ask another question? And this has to do with Larry's business. Am I understanding this, that the lower the number, mm-hmm. the less reliance on search?
Correct.
Business? Is that right? So.
I don't think that's what that number means. It just means that the lower the number, the higher the probability that this new board member is somewhere closely associated with the CEO.
I can see that at the 2+, right? But 1.1 means that you almost know the person, right?
You do know.
No, one is if we know each other.
Yeah.
So 1.1 is. I know you, and this is somebody that you know that you recommend.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you look down in the columns, so the minus 12 basically says 12 years before this person gets appointed onto the company board, in 2008, the average is 3 steps away.
Kathy, can I take a shot at what Craig was saying also?
Mm-hmm.
If I look at this progressing from 1999 to 2011,
mm-hmm.
and also look at it going down from 1 year to 12 years prior to being selected as a director, it seems to me the pool is getting incredibly small.
Correct.
And intimate.
Yes, that's absolutely the case.
Almost incestuous.
So it does seem that, as at least in the space of publicly traded companies, people are increasingly go to their close circle friends to appoint board members, and with one possibility being that the SEC independence rule is on people's nerves. And people worry about all sorts of possible problems that could arise from the Sarbanes-Oxley, and they try to hedge their bets by going into closer circles of friends, just to be more on the safe side.
But when you think about how the social networking has changed, and the internet, and the ability to interact and know lots of people, does it really mean friends? It just means that I think a lot of us know a lot more people than we ever did before. I mean, you know, when I left General Instrument 20 years ago, you almost lose touch with people unless you made a concerted effort to keep in touch. And now, I mean, there's lots of people on the internet, LinkedIn, I don't have that many, you know, 500 plus. I was saying, I always doubt there's like 1,500 people that you really have a strong relationship with. Some leave and then others come in. And it's friends. It just seems like we have much more ability to stay in touch and be connected than we ever did before. That's
definitely possible, except that when we are doing this research, we're actually very careful in measuring the substantial relationships. So we do have older friends, but we don't have the LinkedIn type, met at the party and let's connect type of friends.
What sort of factors, if you don't use LinkedIn, you say you do or don't use LinkedIn?
We do not.
So what sort of factors then would you look at to determine if somebody's connected with somebody else?
It's based on people's work experience, their professional experience.
So if you worked at the same company? Or?
In that nature. So actually I wanted to say that because of our limitations, this number can only be larger than it actually is because we gotta miss some kind of relationships. This is not possible for us to be 100% capturing the entire social space of every person. So this number is actually bigger than the real number, the real world.
Mm-hmm. So is that the main factor, previous career history, where you work, and sort of lining that up, the degrees of separation?
Correct.
So Larry, do you find that in recruiting then, that the volume's going way down if everybody's just hiring their friends, or do you end up just hiring their friends, or how
does it work? They send us their friends. Interview our friends.
They need a firm to be intermediary, and then they go to Larry and say, look at this guy.
Yeah, he's very independent. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it depends on how strong the nominating governance committee is. And if you have a board culture that was where everybody is sort of polite, and I think that the cliche is we all get along together and we're honest together, which means we're not, then you're probably not going to be using a search firm. And you will probably get this.
So you're on a sample in terms of...
Yeah, you know, again, if you look at the broad population of Kathy's 1,500 public companies, they still, you know, again, if you take the Fortune 500 out of that equation and you just look at the small to mid-cap companies, first thing they're going to do is, before they're going to hire a recruiting firm like us or anybody else, they're going to say, who do you know? And you say, well, you know, I belong to the, you know, Wellesley Golf Club, and I know this guy just retired, and he looks pretty good. Well, before we call Larry Stabel, why don't we talk to Leonard, see if he's right.
But the public company aspect is a little different than, because you have to, don't you, show you searched far and wide to find this director, and not the fact he was your backdoor neighbor. So you may have to hire a firm just to cover that aspect, even though you give them a list of some people that you know.
You may
that you were objective and made your search.
Yeah.
Several years ago, there was a software company that was founded by Mel Minow, and they looked at boards of public companies and found, and they checked, and most of the people belonged to the same golf clubs, and it was more social. It was, maybe they worked together as well, but do you have any component of social affiliation, such as clubs or in your research?
I used to have that. Okay. I actually cut them out.
Okay.
Because the sort of the bias that it introduces.
Okay.
So the in and out of a social club is a lot harder to get on paper or any kind of data than the in and out of the company.
And let me comment on what you just said. And let me make an analogy that I think that holds up. If you're a public company, particularly if you're a public company in the New York Stock Exchange, you're required to do board of directors self-evaluation. Well, okay, you're required to do that. There are many ways in which board can meet that requirement. And that ranges from hiring a firm to do an objective measure, and then let's discuss it, to we're going to hand out a checklist at the board, to we're now going to talk about board self-evaluation. Anybody ever have a problem with this board? Let the record show we just did it. And I've seen everything in between. The SEC is not investigating in a very thorough way, you know, how board members are selected. And so if you have a culture at a board of checking the box, you're going to do this. You will, that culture of check the box will probably go with where Kathy is.
Yeah, and excuse me, I may not be clear. I wasn't really thinking about the SEC. I was thinking about a shareholder that might want to make sure there is arm's length and objective.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I think what matters is like what the shareholder advisory firms say. I mean, they carry the weight. If they deem someone to be independent and don't have to, you know, plot based on stock exchange rules, occasionally, you know, they'll pick up this, okay, this person has a connection to Stanford and Google and have issues with it. But I think typically, at least for public companies, it's sort of how their framework for deciding who's independent is what the vast majority is.
Are you talking about ISS?
The ISS or some other firms.
Right. So the other thing that's not reflected in this table is this very strong effect of social clustering. So when we talk about clustering, we basically look like the internal connections among the group that we're looking at versus their connections to the outside of the clusters. So we sort of cut a boundary to define these clusters. And they certainly show that there's sort of a distinct part of the social map where, you know, this internal, there's this, what do you call it, the core of the professional social sphere. It's very stable, and there's these sort of isolates outside of these clusters. And if you sort of network around in the isolates area and not get into the main core cluster, it almost feels like you're wasting your time. So the one thing that we're trying to do is to present these social maps so that people can see where they're actually located. Whether they're at the core, the leaflets, which is loosely attached, or the isolates, which are like satellites outside of the universe. And guess who resides in the center of the core?
Donald Trump.
Maybe yours.
According to him. Okay.
According to Donald Trump.
Yeah. So if you think about the Fortune 500 companies and think about the most important businessmen.
That's Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett, very good. Who else?
Jamie Dimon.
JP Morgan.
Jeffrey Amell from GE.
Morgan is way higher.
Really?
Yeah, the bankers, the big bankers. The head of Goldman Sachs, the JP Morgan Chase. They're actually
higher than the psychologist?
higher than Donald Trump. Right. Okay. So, Larry, your turn. The last question here.
Last question is
number three.
So, some of you are, you know, Leonard mentioned that he wants to get on more boards. Some of you mentioned that you want to get on more boards. So again, if the bankers are sort of in the center of the center, so they are the ones. So how do we go after the bankers? if you want to get on a board, what is a board strategy that you want to do, particularly if it's a public company board? What would you recommend doing? What groups would you recommend?
Is that just bankers generically, or is it Jamie Dimon and Brian Moynihan?
The big bankers.
So eight of them or 12 of them or whatever, it's kind of, so.
Well, you don't have to get into the center of the universe like Donald Trump does, right? So there's still, it's a very big country. There's still I think outside of, the total number of directors in S&P 1500 companies is a lot more like, I think like 20,000 people. So you don't have to chase the 10, you can chase the 20,000.
Score an invitation to Davos conference. If you can't get that, get the...
I think you write a check for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're very egalitarian if you have the bank account.
Write a check to the Clinton Foundation.
Well, you raise an interesting point. So one of my pet peeves was the concentration of banking. As someone who, after I left my corporate career, was involved in small to medium-sized businesses, I like local bankers. When Ira Stepanian ran Bank Boston, he really cared about tech and small companies. And they got acquired by Fleet. Fleet got rolled up to Bank of America. And finding people locally from Bank of America to talk to is really, really hard. And a lot of the local banking community that was mid-sized disappeared. And I had a discussion with John Hamill. How many people know John? He ran Shamet and then wound up on the board at Bank Santander for North American operations. And John and I were at a dinner, and I said, John, this is so frustrating. And he says, well, we had to do it because we were going to lose out to the Japanese banks and to the European banks who had more clout. So that conversation with John was 10 years ago. Fast forward to today. Where are all those big foreign banks? Deutsche Bank's in trouble. Our Royal Bank of Scotland is in trouble. HSBC is in trouble. The Japanese banks that had so much clout in the early 90s have basically disappeared from our landscape. And it's all changed, but we have these behemoth banks that, unless you're in the Fortune 500, you really don't bank with. Having been a career banker, I disagree that the bankers themselves, the relationship managers, vice presidents, senior vice presidents, believe they're all still there. These are the guys I grew up with, work with, Shaman, States, or even Citizens and all that. They're all still working. Once they got older, are now retired, but they're all still there. They might have changed seats and all that. I think the thing that's harder to find is if you knew, like an Ira Stepanian, that's a great example, really approachable guy. I think it's harder to find bank presidents, and that's what you don't have in Bank of America here. You know, nobody knows who the head guy from Bank of America is. It's hard to find somewhere else, it's in Chicago or Charlotte or Arizona or whatever. And it is easier to find the local bank or regional bank head guy. But the bankers themselves, who are actually the RMs that are delivering the bank to their clients and all that every day, they're all still there. And they may have changed seats, but
could the size of the new organizations be such that they're not so much customer facing anymore? That's further down, that's maybe online or something along that line?
No, they're still customer facing. They're definitely still in the market. If anything, it's been like a, in my view, and Doug, you know a lot of these guys too, if anything, there's been a dearth of younger bankers coming along because the guys in my age group are not going. Need the jobs, not retired.
Well, one of the trends that I've seen is as the continual consolidation on the high end of the market has occurred, you've had a lot of people spinning out Citizens, out of Bank Boston when Fleet bought them, out of Fleet when Bank of America bought them, and they're at People's United, they're at Berkshire, they're at Middlesex, they're at Rockland Trust. Guys that used to have comparable or perhaps more senior positions, they're in a smaller organization, but they are very approachable, and their focus is local. And you can get a hold of them. They go out, they go to different professional groups, different civic groups to try and meet business owners and CFOs and other types of individuals that they can do business with and eventually lend to with some degree of confidence. But I think with the lack of large visible banks in the local area, there's some merit to your position, Ralph, that you really don't know the organization. It's not like when Tom Lee was running the technology group at Bank of America, or Alan Woodward ran the technology group at Bank of New England. Those guys were big in the community. Now, name somebody that heads up a market segment in any bank, or do they just have geographic and size differentiation and they don't break it out by market specialization or end market client, end market customer? The format of the industry has changed dramatically in the last 10, 15 years.
So I'm a little confused here. If the question on the table is how do you find board seats, right? And you said that the key issue happens to be look for who are happen to be in the center. Well, there's certainly new sources of value being created in this world called the tech. So I would have to believe that up there with the big bankers and the Jamie Dimons of the world, you have Elon Musk, right? And you're gonna have some other people like that. And if you take a look at the number of board seats that are created as a result of spin-off from banking as opposed to in tech, then the plethora would be in the tech side, wouldn't it? And so from that point of view, there are other ways to get at the number of these guys, and there's no better place than Boston for life sciences, for example. We know that we just look at the number of patents created, right? We're number one in the world with that, right? Or number two, or number three in the VC issue. So if the question on the table is how do you find board seats and you're not beholden to, tied to, well, get me a seat on a banking thing, then are there not other big people or other areas where we can go to where the new source of value be created? So
I think that's a good point. We're really just picking out banking just to say that they're the center of the universe,
I'm challenging them.
I know, right?
They are a center, but they are not the center of the universe.
There's a really interesting report that came out about 2 weeks ago, I don't know if you saw it, about VCs, venture capitalists, and it really tracks this in terms of kind of the Pareto principle that 90%, it might be off a little bit, but 90% of VCs never raise a second fund. And it's a very, very small percentage of VCs that work together quite often in terms of sharing deals and information that have been there for a long time to make all the money and work with. So literally, it's 5% of the VCs that really see industry, everybody else kind of out there. So I would imagine it's probably those are the people that are commanding the board seats as well in tech. So they're probably the Jamie Dimons in tech.
Let me ask a question. So this is a curious, so you're right, we all otherwise be standing in line outside Jamie Dimon's office with a pick in our hands. Okay, next. So it's, if you had to map this out based on your data, who would be close to, it can't just be only the bankers, right? That's why you rob banks, right? But who else is in that core cluster? Is it tech folks? And what does your data tell you?
Just large company CEOs and the large boards, the boards where the famous people sit on. So basically, I actually wanted to throw out a more practical question. Let's just say that you've identified someone who's sitting on the board and you wanted to approach them and say, hey, I'm interested in joining your board or another board. Now, what's a good way to promote yourself? Do you say that I've got experience in this industry, I've got expertise in compensation. I've got expertise in finance. I know people. What's the sort of the better approach that you should go about in, when you hit up a
potential? If you think about when you're trying to find a new job, what's the best way to get a new job? It's networking. I think I've heard 80 or 90% of new jobs are found through networking. And you know, I was trying to do the same type of thing when I retired and was able to join the boards. But I did, my boss came to me before I retired and said, hey, I know this group based out in Seattle, Washington, and you might want to talk to them because they fill a lot of board positions. It was a company called Exec Reps. So I did get in touch with them, and they had a very effective marketing approach and everything. And I had to pay them $5,000 to, a year later, I had zero opportunities that were identified by them. And so I disassociated with myself with them. I tried to get my money back, which didn't work. But I had then other people contact me that had been signed up with that group, and they had this, sort of the same experience. So you do have to be careful out there as well.
What we tell our clients is the mantra is I only have time to be on one board, and I want to make it a good one. So I'm looking for a good board. But always say you don't have time to be on a lot of boards, because the reality is for most of you who are working, you don't have a lot of time to be on boards. But then there's a second issue, and that is the more enthusiastic you are about being on boards, the less likely that you're going to be on boards. And the more you come across as I'm incredibly busy and happy, but I've only got time to be on one, the more attractive you are. You know, in terms of Nexus, what I see, at least in my world, things are getting very siloed, just because it's just too much information. And so people kind of go with their crowd. So for example, if we're looking at fintech, I would probably say find a corporate attorney, not a transactional attorney, not a litigator, but your basic corporate attorney who does a lot of fintech work. And that person will probably know a lot of other people in fintech, know a lot of CEOs in fintech. In many companies, every board has required to have a secretary. There's a presumption, false presumption, that if a lawyer is the secretary, then the minutes are confidential. And that turns out not to be true. But I don't see many lawyers who tell their clients that. So you'll find many partners of law firms are the de facto secretaries of boards of directors of particularly smaller companies that don't have their own general counsels. So those people know when the openings occur because they're secretaries to the boards. So I tend to recommend people network with corporate counsels, but particularly look at this kind of corporate attorneys will then specialize within certain groups, and there'll be probably somebody who does a lot of fintech, and there'll be somebody who does more life sciences than fintech, and those are the kinds of people that you want.
How did, sort of following up on your experience, so it sounded like you networked, obviously you found Andrew along the way, but what would be some of the, as you kind of step back and think about it, what would be some of the key themes that you would sort of think of now as the routes you followed to network you into the right
kinds? You know, over the course of my life, I worked until the point when I retired, I worked for six companies, and so I reached out to people, executives at those companies to let them know that I was available. I had a guy who was a great financial advisor to me for 14 years for the company. I reached out to him. He actually came to me with one opportunity.
Was he the chairman of a big bank?
He wasn't. He used to work for Peter Peabody. Okay. He's got his own boutique shop here in Boston. And You know, there were some other people that have been, you know, I've got some friends in London and they've talked to me about board opportunities and those kinds of things, but.
So it's kind of building your really, your core network and then following where that led.
Yep, yep.
That sounds good.
Anybody else? Any other questions for Kathy?
Yes. I don't understand how your model works.
I don't either. Thank you for saying that.
I wanted to go back there also. Go ahead.
So, could you just very simply explain how you collect this data and how does the algorithm work?
Okay. So, the foundations of this data collection is natural language processing and artificial intelligence. We use a lot of APIs from IBM Watson.
What's an API?
What's the name of the API?
What is an API?
Oh.
Next to another program, so is that application program, everybody said sort of good. Just using somebody else's algorithm.
Not an active function. Hooking into something.
You send up a data.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's, you can think of it as a black box where you give them input and they give you output. And so we sort of use that to speed up our development process. Instead of reinventing the whole algorithms ourselves, we just take a black box and process the data that way. So there's, I guess if you even go back one step further, Lenny, you probably know about the ZoomInfo. They get their data, the very foundation of the data, from web scraping. So it's just scraping the internet.
And your question started me thinking, how do I do all this stuff? And you know, ParXL had a group of 12 banks that were doing work for us, and I created contacts with those banks. So I reached out to the people that I had worked with